Hey, data science superfans. Welcome back to a new episode from your favorite, absolutely 100% favorite podcast, not just data podcast, not just technology podcast, but your favorite podcast. Like maybe there's that stuff that like NPR releases and it sounds all fancy.
Trash.
Maybe there's that stuff. Blah. Exactly. What is that crap? Public radio professionals doing their jobs. Ridiculous. This is the podcast where things get real. So anyway, if you've never listened to the show before, I'm very sorry that you have no idea yet what's going on. This is a podcast about data science and data and just general geekery. And it's hosted by the three of us who are going to make some jokes and talk about cool data stuff. Also, we're drinking. But before we get to that, quick introductions. My name is Jonathan.
And my name is Vidya.
And I'm Chris.
All right. Excellent. I think with this level of enthusiasm, there is no way that we will have the most amazing show in the history of the geeky podcasting. And I am alive yet again another day. although I think what will liven things up is that we can talk about drinking beer. So let's start off the show in the usual way. What is everybody drinking?
Well, the beer that I'm drinking is a Pinot Noir from
Vomit.
Vomit. Excuse you. This one's delicious. It's from the local. It's like really close by to my house. Willamette Valley, Argyle, 2013 Reserve Pinot Noir. It's spectacular. I've been there a lot recently.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
I am drinking a Hop Shock IPA from Santan Brewing. It is awesome. It's probably one of my favorite beers that I've been having recently. So 10 points for that one.
Is that the beer where on the label the dude looks like he's just, I don't know, like been riding in a car with the top down? And he's like, whoa, like his hair's crazy back. Am I thinking of the right beer?
No. That's Shock Top. This is Hop Shock.
Oh.
Oh, I was thinking the same thing. Right, there's like an orange.
It's like an orange peel mohawk. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Right.
All right. Okay. So I'm judging you a little bit less than I thought I was judging you when we first started talking. I'm sure that's a lovely beer and not a ridiculous one. Okay. So I'm also drinking. I'm drinking beer in a can. Boom. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Which is kind of a cool, I've noticed that.
Well, cans are cool again.
Yeah, cans are.
Wine cans are also cool again.
Oh.
Wine cans were never cool in the first place. What do you mean that they're cool again? Is that a thing? Are you serious that wine comes in a can?
Pretty solid-ish wines in a can now. That's definitely the hipster thing.
Huh.
My God. Okay. We have made America great again.
But it's already been done.
Success. It's already happened. Sorry. So I'm drinking a beer from a brewery in Austin called Austin Beer Works, and it's called Peacemaker. And nice. I like that it's called Peacemaker. They call it an anytime ale, which I think translates into not a ton of alcohol in there. So, it's the kind of like, I'm done with work. I'm going to chill out a little bit and drink a couple cans of beer. Like it's that kind of thing. It's delicious. It's perfect for recording podcast episodes in the middle of the day when otherwise it would be weird to be drinking by yourself.
Like
I need an excuse. I know. I don't know, Ms. I spend a lot of time there.
I know. I basically live at the winery. All right, fine.
I take it all back. All right, cool. So we're all drinking and we're going to talk about some data science stories. Shall we do it?
Let's do it.
Yep. Let's do it. This episode is brought to you by Data.World, the social network for data people. Discover and share cool data, connect with interesting people, and work together to solve problems faster at Data.World. So Data.World just launched a few new things to help you find data faster. Now you can search by column or table name, you can limit results by date range, you can filter results by tags, and more. Learn about discovering data on Meta, the Data.World engineering blog at meta.data.world. Check it out. Hey, we're about to get to the news, but I wanted to give everyone an update about Data for Democracy, our volunteer collective of data scientists and software engineers and technologists using their powers for social good. We're going to hear from Numa Damani and George Richardson about a project George is leading in partnership with the Internal Displacement Monitoring Center focused on refugee migration. But before that, I wanted to let you know that we're having a hackathon the weekend of March 31st. So there are in-person meetings happening in cities across the country, New York, Washington, D.C., Louisville, Chicago, Seattle, Austin. You can also participate remotely, so join us online, chip in on one of our many active projects, or start something new. We'd love for you to join us. And now, let's hear from Numa and George.
Can you talk about your experience in Data for Democracy and why you joined the community?
Yeah, so I first heard about the community on Partially Derivative, like lots of people, I'd imagine. So last year, I finished my PhD and decided to transition into data science, specifically looking at, you know, social good or environmental good. And I guess it seemed like there must be a community of like-minded people out there somewhere, but I never really seemed to find it. And as, so as soon as it came up on the podcast, I was right there, ready to join.
No, that's awesome. And I mean, it's a great reason to do it. Can you talk about the project you're leading and the progress that's been made?
Yeah, so the project I'm leading is, it's actually a challenge that's been set up by the Internal Displacement Monitoring Center to track events about people displaced by natural disaster or conflict by looking at articles online. So they have a huge list of links to websites. And normally these would be kind of people would have to, an analyst would visit those websites and then read the article and try to gather whether it's an article about someone who's been displaced or some people who've been displaced and how many people and why and where. And obviously that's very time intensive. And so we're looking at a way to automate that using some web scraping and natural language processing.
Is there anything you want to highlight? Any specific accomplishments that the team has gotten so far?
Yeah, I mean, I've been really amazed by some of the natural language processing work that's been done by Simon Bedford and James Allen and Daniel Forsyth to, like, extract the details from the articles. You know, some of the articles contain information about multiple events of people being internally displaced within their countries, and so they're working on some really cool stuff to try and distill that into specific event information. I guess, yeah, just getting the project off the ground has kind of been a highlight for me as well. Yeah. I came from a background where I worked on an academic background where I would work on stuff alone, essentially. And, you know, coming together with a team from all different continents across the world and working together on this project remotely has been really inspiring.
So what are the next steps?
So the next steps are really to take, we've written a load of Python infrastructure to do the scraping and the text analysis. And the next steps are really to turn this into an app that's usable by someone who might not be a data scientist or a coder. Mm-hmm. So someone maybe a UN agency who wants to get an overview of how many people have been displaced and to verify some of those articles and maybe view it on a map of the world or view some visualizations of how many articles are talking about displaced people from certain regions and things like that. So that's really where we're trying to take it at the moment.
All right. Thanks, George and Numa. And now back to the news.
Who's first?
Jonathan's first.
Yes, in the grand tradition of how we did these shows.
Jonathan's always first.
I don't know why. I don't know how it got to be.
Why? Yeah. Why are you first?
No, this is you'll see the behind the scenes of these episodes, viewers. We have like a list of who goes when, and we've been copying the same document over and over again to the same person. I'm too lazy to like randomize which name goes first, so it's just the same thing as we've done forever. Just because I copy the same document and Jonathan's name is first in that document.
You know what they say, first the worst, second the best.
Aww. I thought really what we were going to say is beauty before age.
it's laziness. Laziness is the real reason.
All right. Well, I guess you could call it laziness or you could call it tradition. So this is like an episode of The Crown. Okay, so I have a story. So what I haven't done in a while, because, you know, we can get kind of conceptual with these stories, is that I actually wanted to showcase a really practical example of something that's really relevant to the show. So it's a blog post by a guy called Jean-Nicolas Old. So he may not pronounce his name in the very French way that I just did. It looks like Jean-Nicolas Hold, but it's probably like Jean-Nicolas Old.
Wouldn't it be Jean?
Yeah, I thought it was Jean.
Ooh,
hello.
Jean. Of course. Totally. I'm just trying to imitate that candle from Beauty and the Beast.
Yes. Timely.
When in doubt.
Okay, sorry. Sorry, Jean-Nicolas. Yeah. Actually, in all seriousness, I am sorry for making fun of your name. I just don't know how to say it. So anyway, so Jean, we'll call him, he makes himself a little craft beer data set. By scraping the web. I know.
Who wants a data set?
Exactly. There's a man focused on the right problems. So we've had a couple listeners write in to let us know that they've been working on kind of like craft beer data science problems, which is cool. And I think we've showcased a couple, but it actually is a little bit difficult to get a good data set of craft beer. They're kind of all over the place. There's an app called Untappd that you can use when you're drinking, and they have a great data set, but I think you have to pay for it. I mean, if you're listening to this, or if any of your data scientists are listening to this, I know a handful of people who might get some real value out of it if you were willing to release it to the public, or even a small group of passionate data science drinkers. Just putting that out there, our address is hello@partiallyderivative.com. In the meantime, I wanted to talk about this way to scrape the data that you might need to put together a craft beer data set. It does not come from Untappd. Please don't have your lawyers send an email to hello@partiallyderivative.com. It comes from someplace else. You can go find out for yourself when you will link to the blog post that Jean wrote in the show notes for this episode. In the meantime, I thought to myself, we have beer. We have Python, which is the language that John used in his examples, also the best language in the universe. And we have this ethical gray area. So I thought it was perfect for our podcast, which is pretty much an ethical gray area. If you're not familiar with web scraping, the basic idea, listeners, is that you write a program that can read a web page's content. So just like you use your browser, so you use Google Chrome or whatever, you request the contents of a website by putting the address in the address bar. The browser requests the contents of that website and returns it to you. So many programming languages can do the same thing. They have built-in libraries for doing exactly that. The only difference is that your browser understands how to take that content and display it to you in a way that you can, you know, read, or that's easy for you to read. And the programming library just gets the raw HTML, the markup that is put around all of the text contents of the page to give the browser some indication of how it should be displayed. Okay. So you get this raw HTML, and this is pretty handy to be able to do this with a software program, because if you grab the contents of a web page, especially if there's a table of data in that web page, which is not uncommon, you want to investigate that with the tools you normally use to play around with data, like Excel or R or Python or whatever. You can't do that if the data is trapped in the web page. So you got to get it out. You got to extract it. And that's what Jean does in his tutorial. He walks like step by step how to use an HTTP request library that comes with Python called Urllib or URLlib. This is one of those words that I've only seen and never heard pronounced. So I say Urllib in my mind when I'm thinking about it. So you say whatever you want. Actually, tweet at us if you say something different. Like if you say URLlib every time in your mind when you see that in your Python code, please let me know. I have a funny story about Nginx related to just this thing. I'll save for the end. Okay. So John basically watched through this. He uses Urllib to retrieve the contents of a web page, and that gets him the raw HTML. And then once he has the contents, he walks you through using a library called Beautiful Soup, which is a very popular library for parsing HTML content and inspecting it. And you use it so that you can kind of, like, if you've ever used jQuery or something to, you know, traverse the DOM, which is like the document, the HTML document that is a web page. And so he uses Beautiful Soup to traverse the DOM and find just the information that he needs inside that HTML to populate a data set of craft beers by name, city, state, style, whatever. And that part is super clear. It shows you everything from inspecting the source HTML on the page using Google Chrome. If you've ever used like View Source or the Google Chrome like web inspector. So you can basically see what HTML is like wrapped around the content that you want. And then he shows you going from that to basically doing the same thing in Beautiful Soup to extract the content into the program that you're writing. And then he goes one step further and gives some examples of cleaning up the new data set with pandas, which is the, you know, the popular Python library for data wrangling and analysis. So you can basically go from raw content on some web page somewhere to a nice pandas data frame. And at the end, you have a data set of craft beer, which is awesome. So they're if you are new to this, you should know that there are entire like libraries and like software packages dedicated just to web scraping. One that's really popular in Python is called Scrapy, S-C-R-A-P-Y, because you got pi in the name, so you know it's a Python package, but it's also scraping. It's very clever, and it's also very easy to use. But if you're interested in understanding the basics, like what you're actually doing in that process and how to, you know, go through that, like, that HTML inspection, which is kind of the difficult part of this process, this blog post from Jean is fantastic. We will link to it in the show notes. You should go check it out. Before we move forward, Nginx. So, like Earllib, Nginx
Why don't you spell it out?
Yeah. Okay. So, for everybody who doesn't know what that is, it's a web server. And so when you're like, oh, I want to put my web page on the internet, how should I do that? You find web servers and you're like, okay, Nginx. And it starts with N-G-I-N-X. N-G-I-N-X. And you're like, oh, engine and X because it's edgy. Okay. So like Nginx, I get it. That was what I thought when I said it. And then I was hanging out with a friend of mine who is also a software engineer. He's been a software engineer for like a billion years. He is exceptional at his profession, but like me, doesn't often discuss the technical tools that he uses amongst friends for no reason, right? So he had his own pronunciation in his head. And he says to me, he's like, yeah, I've been looking at different web servers for this application I'm considering deploying. There's one, Nginx. Have you used it?
Oh, no. Gross.
And like, it took me so long to figure out what he was talking about. I was like, that sounds a little dirty. Like, what do you mean? And like, not only that, but like, because this happens a lot. I'm not like judging the fact that he didn't come up with the same pronunciation I did, but it's more like of all the possible pronunciations as you're thinking like to yourself, what's plausible? I mean, it could be like Nginx, it could be Nginx, it could be like, I don't know, Nginx, like, like whatever. Any of those would be better than Nginx, which is the one that he ended up settling on for himself. So that's it. That has nothing to do with the scraping story. I just felt like sharing that because every time I'm reminded of it, I just really love that moment when I had to think, oh, he's not talking about like, he's not talking about a woman's private parts. He's talking about a web server that I'm also familiar with. Excellent. Okay.
I mean, first of all, who calls a woman's private parts an Nginx?
Well, there's that bit in the middle that sounds like, you know.
Right. No, I hear you totally. But I'm just imagining a scenario when like that would somehow be appropriate.
when somebody's like, I'm not sure, you know, like I actually, any sentence that I can come up with to put that usage in context sounds offensive in my head. So I'm just going to
not go there.
Let's not do that.
Okay, should we just move on to my story? My story is actually kind of beautifully aligned with your story because it is also about drinking.
Well, thank
you. So, surprise. So, okay, imagine this scenario, right? You need to impress someone, like a date or a boss, high school crush, etc., people that you might want to show off to. And so here's a scene. The scene is some kind of shared meal. Maybe it's a happy hour or a dinner out, dinner party, a social setting, lunch at home even, but there's a meal around here. You get the picture. So you've got a few options for how to actually do this impressing. You can, option one, be the smart, charming, funny character, you know, likable, life of the party type.
Mm-hmm, that's me.
Yeah, that's one option.
Everybody says so. I mean, I wouldn't say it about myself, but people say it about me.
Right. Everybody thinks that. Or two, you can just bring something amazing that indicates by proxy how spectacular you truly are.
It's like a water buffalo or something. Like, what do you bring?
Sure, that would be very amazing if you brought a water buffalo to a party. Let's do it. But some people bring things. You know, they bring, you know, they bring a car. They'll bring food, whatever it is. So they'll bring something that they think is impressing. So these are easy enough options that I think most people consider. And option one, the smart like personality one, is not always feasible, you know, unless you're like have that automatic personality and you are a natural charmer. But mm-hmm. if you're a natural asshole, and I'm not saying you are, not at all saying you are, but if you are, then you're kind of stuck with option two. And and this in my life has like happened, you know, from time to time. I think it's a pretty universal scenario, and I'm sure every one of us has been in this kind of position before. So what do you bring? You know, you're taking option two. Maybe you're like tired and you don't want to be the funny person or whatever. So what do you bring? I think most people think about bringing alcohol, like a wine or, you know, some like nice sophisticated sounding thing. Duh, right? Bring yep. alcohol. Then that would get the target weakened, dulls their senses, and you can act like a buffoon and no one will be sober enough to realize that it's not you that's amazing. In fact, it's actually them.
I like that you're describing like an extraction, you know, you're like, dull the senses of the target and then implement the plan.
Actually, your premise starting out with this, that you would bring something that shows how spectacular you are. And then you ended with, well, you get the person so drunk that they don't right. realize that you're not spectacular. So like, really the thing that you're spectacular at is like making everyone so drunk that they forget.
Well, it's all perception, you know? So it's like perception of spectacularity. No, that doesn't even a word. But this whole process of like, you know, bringing alcohol, and then, you know, that's just sort of the plus point. Like in case, you know, in case the alcohol can just help make everything seem better than it is, which might also mean that I just gave away the secret of our podcast. But let's keep on drinking. So back to the scenario. So you're bringing wine, right? Yeah. What kind of wine are you bringing? If you're Chris Albin and you like have this wonderful encyclopedia of like the best wines to bring all the time, then you have no problem.
The canned wine. Yep.
Exactly. Right. I was going to say, like, I think the canned wine is up there with the water buffalo.
just two cans of wine and a water buffalo, and I walk into some loft party.
I like this. He's like, you really are rural, aren't you? You're like bringing these.
Just got my water buffalo.
This is what you bring to the party. Everyone's impressed. This is great. But I always have this challenge. Like, I'm clearly, if you've been listening to some of these past episodes, you know, I'm like experimenting with learning about wine, and I still am no good at it. So I wouldn't know what kind, and I'm sure many people don't know what kind of wine to bring. Because how do you know what kind your impressee would like, right? You don't know. So most of us would pick a wine that we like, or somebody at this wine store recommends, like maybe it's a wine that they like, which is not perfect. But it is better than getting a personality makeover, which you probably don't have the time or patience for. I know I wouldn't. So you take your chance. Right. Well, I mean, you want to impress. You don't have a lot of time. Grab some wine. Hopefully it's good. And you kind of, you know, take your chances. So red wine it is. Maybe it's a Cabernet. And so you bring the wine and it's fine. No one complains. It's fine. But no one really notices either, which means your option two didn't really work out that well. So you're kind of at the last minute stuck at pursuing option one and trying to get them drunk on wine that they probably don't care for that much. So this is like
with
a fail.
The extra burden of being funny and entertaining.
Exactly. It's a shitty situation. So this plan is going nowhere fast. Now let's imagine an alternative scenario in a more benevolent, kinder, parallel universe where life brings you everything you need just when you need it.
Oh, like Uber food.
Kind of like Uber food. Kind of. I mean, so you're bringing wine in this new universe, but what kind? Well, of the kind that your data science powered mapping visualization recommends.
Hey, there you go.
Nice.
I know. There it is. There's the connection. People are like, what does this have to do with anything?
They're like, I don't go to parties. I'm a data scientist.
What's a visualization of wine?
Right. So what is this? It's kind of amazing. Then, and I think it's, let me like just forgive you the domain name. So it's wineandcheesemap.com.
Oh, cool.
Yes, that's what it is. So we already live in this benevolent parallel universe where life brings you everything you need just when you need it, because that website and the stuff behind it is amazing. So here's an article from BBC.com where Jessica Murphy writes that Professor Gary Bader of the University of Toronto has created an interactive mapping graphic of about 1,000 ideal wine and cheese pairings with the tool, with the same technology that him and his team of computer scientists and molecular geneticists usually use to visualize complex gene networks. I love that. So nice. People can use this same technology, the same site, to explore the best pairings of about 100 red and white wines and 270 cheeses. And they can delve into the web of connections between wines and cheeses from all over the world. It's kind of amazing. You just, here's a lovely quote from him. You just quickly look at a picture and see patterns that would be very difficult to find if you were looking through data spreadsheets one row at a time. Oh, yes, it would. It would be very difficult, Mr. Bader. Very difficult indeed.
These are the important applications of data science, I think. You know, where it really shows off the true power of extracting knowledge from raw information.
That's true. Yeah, who looks at spreadsheets, data spreadsheets, one row at a time? I want to look at pictures and see patterns. It's just, that's correct. That is the point of data visualization. So Professor Bader's research team originally helped to build this visualization platform to make analyzing complex networks easy that helps them learn more about genes and their role in diseases like cancer and autism. But now you can select the wine you like and get a world-class recommendation for the perfect cheese pairing through this interactive visualization. It's a ton of fun. So I searched for the Pinot that I'm drinking right now, and I discovered that the best cheese to go with this is something called the Cardinal Sin.
Wow.
How perfect. I love it. Already I am feeling much more impressive. Are you guys impressed? You should feel impressed.
Wow. Fit, did you just know that? You must have like an amazing, just your palate. You know, I'm just really impressed with your palate and the knowledge.
It's true. See, wow, Foxy.
Really the life of this party.
I love it. Yeah, I am the life of this party. I also have a useful factoid related to this, which might be helpful for you all who are going to parties. So they've noticed some patterns, including which wines were most easily paired, like Syrahs, Red Burgundies, and California Merlots. So these are the safer bets to bring to parties. Note to self.
All right.
That's fair. So like, if you don't have this like app in your pocket when you're in the grocery store, you can just fall back on some, you know.
Yes, exactly. The thing that I love the best is that with data, we can always win at social combat.
Again, you're like, I'm going to a party, social combat. Like, that's an interesting perspective that you have on, you know, kind of polite dinner party conversation.
I think underneath it all, you know, people want to win. Whatever it is, we want to win. And you can win with the best wine and the perfect cheese to go with it. Because if no one likes your wine, you know, your taste in wine and the one that you picked, you can't go wrong with bringing some cheese too. It's like unexpected. It's genius. And the other awesome thing is that this genius idea is actually by Professor Bader's wife. God bless her. She came up with this brilliant idea, and yet she is unnamed in this article, like too many women. Too many times.
We've gone back to like 1700s math.
Yeah, you know, like she's the one who came up with it. I know. Yeah, so I will dedicate my drink and some Cardinal Sin cheese, the cheese, in your name. Mrs. Professor Bader. I love these real life and universal, like almost commonplace applications for data science, you know? Yes, big data. Yes, supply chain optimization. Yes, predictive analytics to foresee changes in very specific asset classes. And a big, especially big yes to wine and cheese and making people think that I'm much more amazing than I actually am.
I like this. This is cool. I mean, I'm looking at it now. There's a bunch of wine that I don't know how to pronounce that is linked to a bunch of cheese that I don't know how to pronounce.
I like that version two of this will be a pronunciation guide.
No, it's like, okay, the wine is Dolcetto de Alba, and the wine is Osio Irata Brebis? I don't know. I don't know what any of those things are at all.
You will sound so impressive.
I know. Totally. I just need to find those somewhere.
Yeah.
So, like, the actual way to be impressive with wine and cheese at parties is to learn how to pronounce really obscurely named wines and then memorize where they're from and what they taste like. And so it's kind of like you just need to know about wine and cheese.
You mean like effort? Like you have to study it?
I don't mean to pop anybody's bubble, you know. Social. If you're gonna come to social combat, like don't go to a gunfight with a knife. Yeah. Is what I'm saying.
Bring a water buffalo.
I like that water buffalo though is like a clear sign that you're probably an asshole. They're like, wow, that's a really impressive thing to bring. That guy is a dick. Like, no way that guy's not a dick.
All right. So last story is mine, not food related, which sucks, but that's okay. So the article comes from Quartz, and it's by Dave Edwards and Helen Edwards, who might be related. I'm not really certain. So the thing that we hear about all the time and the thing that we discuss all the time and that we're going to all talk about in the future is how machines are going to steal our jobs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that's not the way I would put it. I would say that machines are going to take over some jobs because they're really good in it, but they're also going to create other jobs in new areas that we don't have. Like just like, you know, the plane took away a bunch of jobs and added jobs, and spreadsheets, frankly, took away a huge number of jobs and added other jobs. Whatever. That's not really the point. Anyway, the author looked at 30 jobs that are predicted to have the least potential for automation. And he grouped them into, or they grouped them into four categories. One, stuff with interpersonal skills, like school psychologists. Stuff that applies math to business problems, like economists. Healthcare-related stuff, like epidemiologists. And physical stuff, like engineers and scientists. Now, I'm not sure I agree with these groups. And they don't actually say where they found these 30 jobs, like that potentially have a low source of or low chance of automation, but whatever. Not my article. Okay.
Yeah, the school psychologist is totally going to get automated. Like that's what I want.
Just like pills go shooting out.
Because like I'm having a rough day. Kids are picking on me. And then the robot's like, suck it up, kid.
Like, here's some wine and cheese pairings.
I agree, though. Even engineers, which is kind of a crazy one, but I could see bots like engineering designing bridges that are like more efficient or whatever.
Totally. Yeah, I didn't really understand exactly what it was, but they had this overall claim, and this is what I actually thought was the good point of it, was that they claimed that the common factor between all these groups is high unpredictability. And in their words, unpredictable people, unknown environments, highly and complex and evolving situations, and ambiguous data. And I actually like that point, right? Like machine intelligence is really good at making accurate predictions at scale, which is what we exploited for. But human intelligence is really good at making predictions with a really small amount of data. Like that's what we've evolved to do. Like you're walking through and all you've seen is cats, and then all of a sudden you see a tiger for the first time. Like, is the tiger dangerous or not? Well, like we're actually really good at figuring out whether it's dangerous or not using like heuristics and all that kind of stuff. That's like the thing we have better than machines for now. I don't really know what happens in the grocery store, whatever. But the other thing that they kind of like gloss over is the human to human interaction, which I think is actually a huge part. And I think it's where humans will have like basically, I think they're probably one of the safest blocks of careers outside of like certain types of really, really technical things is that, you know, like nobody's going to drop their kid off at an automated daycare. However cool it would be that the daycare would be open 24/7. Like you're just not going to like fling your kid at a daycare and then like walk away. You like want a person, right? You want like some kind of like human to human thing and like human to human interaction and that kind of stuff. And like, it'd be weird if your doctor was like a phone app, like you never actually saw a doctor. You just like waved your app over yourself and like a mail, like whatever drugs came in the mail or something like that. I feel like that's just like going to be really, really hard for at least a generation of people to swallow. Like, maybe when you're used to robots walking around all day, like, that goes away. But I feel like that would be hard for at least a while for people to do. So I like
that. I don't
know,
man. I think that human-to-human interaction could be sometimes overrated in certain scenarios. I mean, certain cities, you know? Like, when I lived in Oakland, it was kind of great. I would meet lots of people on the street. People would be – there's a lot of human-to-human interaction, like stranger-to-stranger interaction that was lovely. But then in other cities like New York, there's a different vibe. And I myself wouldn't even like would be weirded out if somebody started like kind of getting up in my face and started talking to me about anything even nice. So I think also with the success of apps like the Postmates and stuff like that, where you don't have to deal with human beings at all. I don't know,
That's
man.
That's a good point. I will say I really, really want to move to Seattle simply because I can go to the Amazon store where I just walk in and grab the things I want and then walk out and don't need to talk to anybody. That sounds amazing.
I love that because you could also just do that and not even go to Seattle. You could
just like steal stuff. Just like log in.
Order things online, Holmes.
I mean, that takes too long. I mean, who has days to wait for their cheese and cans of wine
That's
in the mail.
True. That is true.
But I mean, the thing about all those is that what you're in all those scenarios, the human that you have to interact with is a roadblock to the thing that you want. Like you kind of have to rely on the human being.
Right.
True. Like it's not like in Oakland when the idea is like, well, what I want out of this is literally the human connection. That is like the end that I'm like the means is the conversation. It's like the means and the end are the same thing. But where with a doctor, you're like, okay, I have to explain to you what I want. I have to put up with your condescension. And then I have to hope that you have enough knowledge as a physician to relate my symptoms to the actual likely affliction, when it might be that you're just not a particularly good doctor, or I'm not a good communicator, or whatever, right? Like one way or another, like this is where we get stuck. I would kind of prefer a machine because the means is not the end there. That exchange is a roadblock to what I really want, which is to not feel sick anymore, like for whatever my problem is. Like, I don't know. I kind of think that that's actually a nice distinction where like there are some human interactions that are like a necessary thing, but we don't care about the interaction itself. And then we could have more room in our lives for the ones where we kind of do want like spontaneous social interaction that's just for fun, you know, which is
I think you're totally right.
So let's do this. Thought experiment. Okay, you have two bars you could go to, and they're both totally basically the same, except for one has a human bartender, and one just has like, I don't know, you push a button and then the drink that you want comes out. Which one do you go to? Each of you should answer this. Which one do you want to go to?
Well, if going with Jonathan's logic, if your goal is just to get a drink, then the most effective one would be the bot bartender. But if your goal is to like, you know, connect with the human being, then clearly the bot wouldn't be the. So I think it really does go back to what you're after. I personally would, I think it would depend on what I felt like. I mean, I'd go to either one depending on what I was into.
Yeah, it might be nice. I mean, I guess to me, it really wouldn't matter. Like I don't socialize with a lot of bartenders. You know what I mean? Like, and I don't mean that came out like judgy, which is not what I meant. I don't go to a bar and just chat with a bartender like some lame-o. No, I mean, that's a normal thing that people do. But I guess, I mean, you could still you could engage in social interaction. Like to me, that doesn't, you could go get the drink from the bot bartender or whatever and be kind of impressed that like a robot figured out what beer you wanted. And that was pretty cool. And then have social interaction with the other people at the robot bar because you guaranteed have something in common that you went to a bar that robots serve the beer.
Right.
Instant conversation starter. You know, you're definitely going to be friends with the rest of those people.
I mean, there's definitely been cases where I've gone to a bar and the bartender was like part of the social experience because either I was going to a bar alone or like, you know, like whatever, they were a really cool talkative bartender. But there have definitely been times that the bartender is that roadblock between me and the alcohol or me and getting my credit card and cashing out my account. Like, totally. I think it's true. I think there's definitely cases where, you know, maybe if we automated bartenders, they would be this like class of really awesome bartender. And then there would be a bunch of bars with no bartender. And we just sort of like go to whichever one we wanted to. Huh.
You know, I think we just don't have a list of really awesome alternatives. Like we're just so stuck in thinking about what we do as jobs and what we do in our lives that like whether it's bartenders or our real jobs get taken over by bots, Like, if we had a list of fantastic, exciting, amazing things that humans could never do before, but now we can, that would be, like, we would be totally into that. And I think maybe we're just not focusing on all the awesome things that we could do. And even if we don't have a long list, but to go about and creating that list would be a good use of our time.
Yeah, that's that's an awesome point. Because, like you used to do spreadsheets, like, by hand with, like, a huge table and, like, rulers. And, like, whenever you change one value, you'd have to, like, work through them. And then if you were doing that job and someone brought along a computer, you'd be like, oh, this is horrible. I'm going to lose my job. This is, like, you know, this computer is going to run the spreadsheets and it's faster than me. And, like, when I change a value, all the other values just, like, change instantly. Like, all the other calculations change instantly. But you don't really realize that, like, 2 years later, you're one of the first computer programmers or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, like, and then that's way cooler than sitting there with a pencil and an abacus or whatever you're using to calculate.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like there are no more problems in the world. Like, maybe we'll just focus on more, you know, helpful things.
Yeah. And I think that's what gets left out of all of these discussions about, you know, machines taking our jobs away, is that as soon as we can do some subset of tasks more efficiently, all we're really doing is expanding human capacity. And then inevitably we set our goals higher, right? Mm-hmm. We decide that we're going to do something else with this new capacity. Like, oh man, now that we can do X, that means that we can solve some fundamentally new class of problems that we've never even thought were possible to go after before. Like, you know, now that we have a car, like, now that we have, like, a motorized buggy, like, you could travel a pretty long distance in a pretty short period of time. Like, maybe what we really need is, like, a system of like, easily traversable paths that are well paved that go across the entire country, right? Because then you could travel really long distances in a short period of time. And then, oh, if that were possible, then maybe what you'd be able to do is move, like, goods and services over long distances really efficiently in short periods of time, like, and on and on and on and on and on. Like, we end up inventing new solutions or better solutions because we have some expanded capacity as a species. I mean, it's not like a zero-sum game between mm-hmm. us and the robots, you know.
Right.
Anyway, that was just food for thought.
Ooh, that's kind of like a pun. That was like canned wine for thought.
Right. A quick word from our sponsor, Vera. Think about this. More data has been created in the past 2 years than in the entire previous history of the human race. By the year 2020, about 1.7 megabytes of new information will be created every second for every human being on the planet. And less than 0.5% of all data is ever analyzed or used. How can this data transcend hard drives to become the information we need to grow businesses, understand our society, and solve our problems? All that data blending, cleansing, cleaning, transformation will need a superhuman effort before anyone ever sees an actionable report or visualization. Whoa. But with the powers of Vera, there's hope. Go to getvera.com and discover how you can become a data superhero. Combine data from multiple places in different formats, clean, dedupe, and transform for analysis, easily schedule repeatable processes to prepare and deliver the information. The world needs more data superheroes, and Vera's parent company, Rapid Insight, is on a mission to empower generations with superhuman abilities to work with data as efficiently and productively as possible, and maybe even have some fun in the process. With Vera, you can still harness your R skills, but also take advantage of its visual tools to do things even quicker. Plus, Vera allows you to collaborate with the non-coders to get the work done faster by a team. You can connect to any data source to blend and transform for analysis, SQL, Oracle, Excel, Salesforce, Text, Vertica, Amazon Redshift, you name it. And you can do it quickly and easily with a visual drag-and-drop interface. Vera is currently rated the number one advanced analytics solution by a number of reviews and total ratings on Gartner's Peer Review Insights website. Share your data superhero story and you can get an official data superhero starter kit at getvera.com. Go be a data superhero.
All right, well, it's that time again. Data science superfans, it has come to the end of the episode, and that is all we have for this week. If you enjoy the show, share it with your friends, rate it on iTunes, do whatever you want to do. If you hate the show, email Chris hello@partiallyderivative.com.
if you were going to get out my email there.
I almost did. I was like, well, maybe not. I'll leave that up to you. So we'll be back. We'll be back next week, of course, as we always are. In the meantime, you can follow us on Twitter at @partiallyd. You can follow Vidya at @vid_spandana. You can follow Chris at @chrisalbin. Another good place to leave your nasty comments about how nothing works like you want it to. And you can follow me personally at Jonathan Morgan. Thanks, everybody, for listening. It's really fantastic to hear from you always, and we think it's great that you're enjoying the show. So thanks again, and we will see you next time.
Have a great week.
Bye, y'all.